That is the longtime theme song of the Smothers Brothers, one of America's most enduring comedy acts. Dick and Tom Smothers are bringing that act to our town to play the Family Arena in St. Charles on April 5th, and I'm proud to welcome Tommy Smothers to KMOX this afternoon. Do I call you Tom or Tommy?
You can call me anything you want. Call me Frank. Tom is fine.
Tom, okay. Welcome to the show. It's nice to have you here.
Well, thank you, Frank. Nice to be with you. We've got a lot of history in St. Louis.
Yeah?
We go way, way back. So it's kind of neat coming into the Family Arena. Our opening act's going to be a local guy from Second City Alumni Stand-Up, Bill Chott.
Mm-hmm.
And Dick and I, we recorded our second album, Mom Liked You Best, in St. Louis at the Crystal Palace back in 62.
I did not know that.
And, yeah, we recorded there, and the first time I ever said Mom Liked You Best just came out. It was a big ad-lib, and it's been probably the only memorable thing we've ever said.
Well, no, see, that's not true, and I was looking at a lot of your stuff today, and reading up on you. I've been a fan for a very, very long time, and I think what's most interesting is you guys, because of your show in the late 60s and the battles you had with CBS, you got this reputation for being very, very political.
Mm-hmm.
But the act has really been more about witty banter and the relationship between two funny brothers, hasn't it?
That's exactly right. Well, you know, if you're going to be, it happened to be really at the scene of an accident, which I call 1968-69. We were on the air 66, 67, 68, and so many things were happening, assassinations, of war in Vietnam, all kinds of bad stuff. And we were young at the time, and we reflected those different views, voter registration and kind of anti-war, kind of a satire. And they said, you can't say that. I said, why not? But then again, today's a different time, a different type of day, isn't it? You know, you just say one thing, like those sisters and
the Dixie Chicks.
The Dixie Chicks, and you're boy, that was terrible.
Yeah.
But you know, number one, if you're going to say something, you better be funny, and you better sing well if you're going to make social commentary. And
does that help mask it?
Well, yeah, then you're just another screamer in the line. If you do it with art, it's become art.
When you guys came back on TV in the late 80s and had yet another shot at primetime, again on CBS, that I guess was when you started introducing the Yo-Yo Man and you were doing some other stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Did you have trouble with the censors then?
No, as a matter of fact, after about the third or fourth show, one of the CBS executives came down and says, hey, man, put a little more spice in it, you know, a little more controversy.
Really?
Yeah. So we did a sketch. It was during a problems in Nicaragua and in Central America, and I came out in a bunny suit. So I said, okay, let's do it. I came out in a bunny suit. He said, what are you wearing? I said, I'm protesting our involvement in Central America. He said, well, that doesn't make any sense. I said, either does our policy in Central America. So we look stupid in that. So is our policy in Central America. Well, why don't you just get out of that suit? I said, why don't we get out of Central America? And then he came back after the run-through and said, that's a little strong.
That's a little strong?
Yeah, so you can say that, but at the end it would say, but it's up to our elected officials to do it for us.
Which actually worked as a joke, didn't it?
Yeah, it worked as a joke. That was the joke.
Now,
we're not very political now. I mean, when people finish our show, they know where we stand, but it's certainly we don't, it's not strident. It's very laid back and relaxed, and it's a family show.
One of the things I've always been interested in was the rock and roll side of the Smothers Brothers. Not that you guys with your acoustic guitar and bass up there are rocking out, but you had a real relationship with them, and I want to talk about some of these incidents. One of the most famous was the very first scene in The Kids Are All Right, the documentary about The Who, and it goes back to, I'm guessing, 63, 64, 65?
No, then 68.
Okay, 68. They appear on your show, and they're doing My Generation, and at the end Keith Moon's bass drum explodes, which was part of the act, and mm-hmm. and Pete Townsend is smashing his guitar all over the place, but it went a little haywire, didn't it?
It went haywire because it's a union house. They said if there are any pyrotechnic and stuff, the union guys will take care of it. So they had this little brass cannon in the drum, and it didn't go off in dress rehearsal. So unbeknownst, Keith Moon comes down and puts another shot of powder in it, and then the the union guys from CBS, they put another shot of powder. So there's three loads in it. The first one didn't go off. There's three loads. When that thing went off, it, if there wasn't the condensers on the mics, it would have blown the mics.
Wow.
But I watch it. We show it. We have a little video in our in our show, a 12-minute video that kind of gives the highlights of the show and some background. And every time I see Keith Moon, he goes, hits his, he's right in front of the drum. It's on a riser. He goes down once. He goes down twice. He's getting ready to hit the guitar again, and the drum goes up. If it had, had been there, it would have probably killed him.
Yeah.
But that was a... Boy, I was shocked. I mean, I was looking around for shrapnel and stuff.
Because you then come in and you want to go over and congratulate the guys on this outrageous rock and roll performance, and you literally, Tommy, looked more stunned than I'd ever seen you.
Oh, well, then he grabs my guitar and smashes it. Who was the guest on that show?
Who?
Betty Davis.
Betty Davis?
So we always had these wonderful mixes with The Who and Betty Davis, Lana Turner and the Buffalo Springfield or something. It was always those weird combinations. One, we had one foot in the past and one foot in the future.
Yeah, I know the Doors made an appearance on your show and did a couple of songs there as well. And you also had a relationship with the Beatles. I watched today on YouTube a clip of you introducing George Harrison on your show to the complete surprise of the audience. This was 1968. The Beatles were still together, and you bring a Beatle out on stage, and the audience just goes berserk.
Well, we got to. We also, because the show was a hot commodity back then when the Hey Jude was presented on the Smothers Show to America.
The video of it.
Yeah, the video of it. So we got a pretty good relationship. I played guitar on Give Peace a Chance with John Lennon. And
how did you get to know the Beatles?
Just our connection with the rock and roll people that we had on the show, and when they presented the I forget what album it is, they presented it, and I was invited to the party and stuff. I guess you get a reputation being kind of hip. I'm 70 years old now, dude. Oh yeah.
It's News Talk 1120 KMOX. Paul Harris talking with Tommy Smothers. He and his brother Dick will be coming to the Family Arena on April 5th. You mentioned playing guitar on Give Peace a Chance. Mm-hmm. And I hear a story, and now I have you here, I can ask you to verify this because I've heard this for a long time. And I used to play that song on rock radio in the early part of my career for a long, long time. Uh-huh. I heard a story that you told John Lennon he was playing the guitar wrong in that song.
No, he was backwards. So it was the other way around. He was playing, I think it was in D or G or something, open string. And so I was going up we were playing, and we're cooking along, and he's in the bed, and I'm playing the guitar, and about halfway through the song, he stops, and he says, "Tom, I don't want you playing that. I want you playing exactly what I want you to double what I'm playing." And I put a couple of diminished chords. I was up the neck. I was showing all my fancy stuff. He said, "Tom, I don't like that."
Get back down here where I need you, huh?
Yeah, double up what I'm playing. And I said, "Oh, okay." But they got it backwards. I wouldn't criticize the guitar playing.
Tell me about being there for the Bed In for Peace. Was that the one in Montreal?
Yeah, that was great. I mean, I wish I'd have kept. You know, I get more requests for interviews about that, and if I'd have known it was going to be that important, I'd have probably been straight when I was there. Nobody else was. I mean, what the heck? But that was great fun. I mean, I look back and all of the people I've gotten to meet, you know, from the Jack Bennies and George Burns to all the rock groups that came on the shows. It was a magical time.
One last John Lennon question. Uh-huh. What's the story about him and Harry Nilsson heckling you on stage?
Oh, God.
Was that in L.A.?
Oh, that was in L.A. at the Troubadour. It was our first time back after about that. A couple of years doing some theater and stuff. And so we came back to do a show, and Paul Newman, I mean, all of Hollywood was there to see it, and Lennon and Harry Nilsson, and I'd hung out with them a lot, and Harry was a good friend of mine. And when I worked one time in Washington, D.C., at Georgetown, I was doing a stand-up by myself working on some material, and he flew out to see me. And I did an hour of material in about 20 minutes, and I had another 40 minutes to do, and so I opened it up for questions. And pretty soon his questions are coming, and he's starting to heckle, and pretty soon we got through the hour, and the second show was a little more chaotic. So he told Lenny, he said, "Tom, really, it really helps him to have someone heckle him." So they came in ripped, and started saying things. I mean, every silence was, I mean, it's turned into fights and all kinds of stuff. Anyway, he was trying to help me, and the next day I got flowers from Lennon and a note from Harry.
But they were thrown out of the club that night, weren't they?
Oh, they were so ripped. I mean, they were. That's the most classic rock and roll time back then.
Yes, it was.
Harry Nilsson, what a great guy! One of the great singers too, ever.
I mentioned that I'd seen some of your stuff on YouTube. Does it bother you that your stuff is out there for free?
No, not at all. I mean, we can't get arrested on television anyway. We're too old now. Every time we go and say we'd like to do a show, yeah, well, you know, you're old people. There's no network for old people. I said, well, why don't we make a network for old people?
But I don't think of you that way, and I don't think a lot of other people think of you that way. You can get on Leno and Letterman, can't you?
No, can't even get arrested. Can't even get near it.
Really?
Well, you know, you come in cycles. You know, sometimes you're out of sync, and sometimes you're in sync, but everywhere we go, we sell out and, you know, get great response, but so far it doesn't transfer to television for some reason. And I guess the only way you get a television show is you play someone's father in a sitcom.
Yeah, you could be, or the wacky next-door neighbor.
Yeah, or the wacky next-door neighbor. Well, we got the Yo-Yo Man, we got the 12-minute video, and it's really fun. And the show, we're having more fun right now than we've had in a long time, and it's we're nearing our 50th year. But starting with Crystal Palace and Jay Landisman, Fran Landisman, the Landisman family, and I was thinking of Ernie's Steakhouse. Is this still down there?
No.
And there was a guy named Ernie Trolla, very famous artist, did The Falling Men. And Barbra Streisand was our opening act in 1961.
Wow.
At the Crystal Palace.
You say, Tommy, that in the show that you put on now, you have a little 12-minute montage of things from your career. Does that include anything from the movie Serial?
No, I hope not.
I came upon it the other night on cable. I had seen it, I think, when it first came out, whenever year that was. And I watched it again, and it's a little bit dated, but there is some very funny stuff in there.
Well, Bill, what was it? Who was it? Martin Mull.
Martin Mull, oh, Sally Kellerman, Bill Macy.
Yeah, it was a great cast. I'm not a very good actor. I'm dyslexic, and so I barely learn my lines. And by the time everybody else has learned their lines, I mean, they've got 8 different ways to say it, and I'm still working on the first way. So film wasn't my strength. It wasn't Jack Benny's either. Jack Benny had to. I always could get I feel audiences. I can feel audience tension, and I know how to deliver a line that way and improvisation or written lines. But in a movie, they say, quiet on the set, okay, roll it. So they say, action! That stops me cold. I mean, it's quiet as heck. That's just not very good at that.
Uh-huh.
Dickie is the best straight man. I mean, I look back at the old Laurel and Hardy's and Abbott and Costello's and Martin Lewis, and I saw some old stuff in about 20 years ago. And I noticed that the straight man did most of the talking, so that it wasn't put so much pressure on the comedian. And another thing I noticed was that the straight men were exceptional. And every time you think of a comedy team, the straight man was really important. And in the early days of vaudeville, they were paid more money because they were, it's called the skilled position, because they're the ones that control everything.
Mm-hmm.
And Dickie's reminds me a little bit of Bud Abbott and Oliver Hardy a little bit. I think the combination.
When you first started working together as a folk singing duo, was there a day or a night that you guys sat down, looked at each other, and said, all right, I'm going to be the straight man, you be the comedian?
Oh, no. It started off as I was always doing the introductions, making stuff up, and Dickie wouldn't say anything. I said, you got to say something. I said, I don't know what to say. He said, then write down an introduction to one of the songs, because I'd make it up. And then pretty soon he'd introduce a song, and then I'd be saying something. He'd say, that's wrong. But that's stupid, and pretty soon it got, you're stupid and you're dumb, and then it got more and more, and it evolved itself into a classic comedy team. I'm the oldest one, so normally if we'd have premeditated it, it would. See, Dickie and I are just so different. I mean, we have the same ears and everything. We're kind of floppy ears, but he's very pragmatic, more conservative by nature, and he wants everything to line up and fit in a box, and I'm kind of loose and floating. So we have arguments all the time. We went to couple counseling about 10 years ago.
So those characters that we're seeing on stage are really the way you guys are?
Oh, very much. much the way we are. And that's, my, of course, mine's more exaggerated.
Mm-hmm.
But Dick is a school teacher. He's a school marm, and he controls things. People always think he's the oldest one because he's keeping things together. But it's pretty authentic, our relationship.
And did your inability to memorize lines mean that none of the Smothers Brothers Act was ever written down?
We outline them. If we get an idea, we outline it. And we have some guy sent me a piece of material that was pretty funny. He said, you know, you're singing Green Sleeves. And then we get into the chorus, Green Sleeves was all in it. And, Dickie's singing, I'm singing Green Beans.
Mm-hmm.
And finally he notices that he's singing Green Sleeves, I'm singing Green Beans at the same time. He says, Tom, it's not Green Beans, it's Green Sleeves. I know. I said it's Green Beans. He says, Tom, it's not a song about groceries. I said, well, it's also not a song about shirts. It's just a start. It's just a start of a routine.
And there you go. We talked before about problems that you had with the CBS censors. Did you guys ever have problems with the owner of any of the venues, from the small nightclubs that you worked in to any place like Vegas or anywhere else? Did they ever come to you and say, don't do that?
Oh, no, never. Never. But the part of that was that after we were fired, all the jobs in Las Vegas dried up except for Harris Club and Reno, Bill Nera. Mm-hmm. He was the only guy that hired us, but we started doing dinner theater, and I played Against Sam out there in St. Louis, St. Charles, maybe.
Yeah.
And did about 3 weeks. So we were out of it. For the 70s were hard work for us. We did some work, and then we started doing theater, and we did a Broadway show that we did a couple of years on. And in 1980, we started from the bottom again, opening up for everybody. We even played discos. And the second time to come back is
well, hold on a second.
What?
I'm trying to picture the Smothers Brothers in a disco. here's Disco Inferno. Here's Saturday Night Fever. Here's the Smothers Brothers.
Well, I was kind of surprised, too, but we took every job we could get at the time. And I walked in, and there's this huge stairway and a whole bunch of electronic equipment, and people were standing on the stairs. It was weird.
The Smothers Brothers with a mirror ball.
That's basically what it was. But that, you know, you work your way back, and all of a sudden we got some commercials for Phillips or something like that. And all of a sudden we got hot, and then we started, got another show, and the 80s show that I thought was really good.
Yeah.
The 80s show was a lot of fun, 1980-89, and the Yo-Yo Man and the reunion of Smothers Brothers Comedy Hour. But listen, we're going into our 49th year now, and so we're going to try to make it to 50 years. So we can say the Smothers Brothers been in showbiz now for 100 years.
Well, we're looking forward to coming out to the Family Arena to see you, and we'll sell you a few tickets here this afternoon, I'm sure. The show is going to be on April 5th. Go see Tommy and Dick Smothers, the legendary Smothers Brothers. Thank you so much for your time this afternoon.
And, Paulie, if you come and see the show, come back and say hello, please.
I would love to do that. Thank you so much.
Hey, thank you.
Tommy Smothers here on the Paul Harris Show on News Talk 1120 KMOX.